Thank you for joining us today for a message from the Word of God. What follows is a recording from one of our live services at Gooch Lane Church of Christ in Huntsville, Alabama. If you're ever in the area, we'd love to have you join us in person. And if you like what you hear today, you can visit us online at teachingtruth.org, where we have videos, weekly articles on biblical topics, information about our services, and more.
Like, you can go ahead and make your way over to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. This is where we'll be spending our time this afternoon. As we think about what we discussed this morning, in Ephesians chapter 6, the apostle gives us really a rallying call to be aware of the enemies that we face. And so he's talked about the rulers and the authorities and the powers. He's talked about the prince of the power of the air, the cosmic powers over darkness. And what he's doing is saying, you've got to understand that you are dealing with a supernatural enemy here. You're dealing with those who can destroy you. We read that and we then think, wonder what Jesus would have said. Here is this one who was there at the creation of all of these beings. They were not created evil by any means. He was there when they chose to abandon God, to rebel against Him. He was there when God pronounced judgment on them. And so surely when Jesus comes to earth, we think about all the things He could tell us. What are their origins? Why did they do this? What do they look like? What should we expect? And Jesus certainly did have those times with the supernatural. There are several instances where Jesus comes into a confrontation with one who's possessed by a demon. Rarely any conversation other than Jesus saying, "Get out," and the demon must comply. Only one conversation that we read, and it's a short one with no explanation as to what it's meant. We then have statements that Jesus makes that are, again, rather difficult to figure out. He says one day, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from the sky," and that's it, right? Not much more about it. So what does Jesus have to tell us? Of all of the things that He could tell us about the prince of the power of the air, all the things He could tell us about the devil, Satan, the accuser, pretty much the longest commentary we have on this is in John chapter 8 and verse 44, when He says, "You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's will. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies." So of all the things Jesus could have told us about the devil, He really boils it down to two points, doesn't He? He says he's a murderer and he's a liar. And take it on my authority, that's pretty much all you need to know about him. But what that does is it introduces us to the danger that He poses. And though the statement is short and to the point, it pulls in a lot of the Bible story into it. And so what I'd like to do for the next few minutes is just to kind of break this down a bit in the context of John chapter 8. Now this is a very long section, so we'll not have the opportunity this evening to talk about it all. But I want us to work our way through some of the high points of the chapter that get us to this statement where Jesus is going to say to a group of people, "Your father is the devil," and then to give us that explanation. But let's begin with just a little bit of context for the section that we're talking about. Here Jesus is in a very heated discussion with the Jews. That was not an uncommon thing. Often He's confronting those who in many ways are close to the truth, but yet in others so far from it. And the Pharisees here, the Jewish elite, have taken issue with Him. Look down to verses 12 and 13. Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness. We understand the context from Ephesians 6 about that. But will have the light of life. The Pharisees said to him, you are bearing witness about yourself. Your testimony is not true. So the Pharisees here call Jesus a liar. You're telling us something that is totally false, which is going to lead Jesus into a discussion that will bring him to talk about his Father. So we're going to go down just a couple of verses here to 16. And as he's talking about his testimony, he says, yet even if I do judge, my judgment is true. For it is not I alone who judge, but I and the Father who sent me. And then if we go down to verse 19, they said to him, therefore, where is your Father? Jesus answered, you know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. So here, Jesus brings God the Father into a discussion, and to get kind of an idea of where this section of John's going, let's just bring out the fact that 19 times in this chapter, we're going to read something about a father. So it's obviously a major chunk of understanding this section. So he talks about his father here. Now, maybe somewhat surprisingly, after the heatedness of this conversation, we learn down in verse 30 that many believed on him. So we're told that flat out here in verse 30. Many are believing in him at this point. And so Jesus makes a statement to them. And he says to the Jews, this is verse 31, who had believed in him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Okay, so here is our other foundation stone for the chapter. As Father is used 19 times, a variation of truth is used 19 times as well. So obviously this discussion is linking the concept of fatherhood and its association with truth, or as we're going to see, an association with lying. So here Jesus makes this point. He gets these two foundation stones laid, and then we're going to find a discussion that breaks out, an exchange with the Jews that's going to center around fatherhood and sonship and being an offspring. Now, when Jesus says the truth will make you free, that confuses the Jews. And so they make a rather odd statement here in verse 33. They answered him, we are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free? Now, we could have a group here that is in total denial, right? They are enslaved to the Romans. Their ancestors were enslaved to the Greeks, to the Persians, to the Babylonians, to the Assyrians. We had all these different groups. And so giving them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they're saying, spiritually speaking, we're God's people. We've never been enslaved to anyone. Really, though, what I want us to focus on is not so much that as what they call themselves. They say, we are Abraham's offspring. And we find with that, that Jesus is in agreement. If you look down to verse 37, he says, I know that you are offspring of Abraham. However, you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. Isn't that interesting? That back in verse 30, it says they believe. Jesus says, okay, I'm going to tell you the truth, and the truth will set you free. And they say, wait a minute. We're the offspring of Abraham. We've never been enslaved to anyone. And Jesus says, yes, I know that you're Abraham's offspring, but isn't it odd that you're trying to kill me? You're making that claim, and yet you're trying to kill me? Well, the Jews then kind of toggle a bit. They say, okay, Abraham is our father. So they kind of turn the orientation around a bit. It's not so much we're the offspring. Abraham is our father. And so here now, we're hitting on one of those foundation concepts, aren't we? With this statement, Jesus does not agree. So look down to verse 39 with me. They make this claim, and then Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the work, the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. So two different ideas going on here. Jesus says, I agree you're the offspring of Abraham. But he says, I disagree that Abraham is your father. And we look at that and we think, well, isn't that kind of the, you know, two sides of the same coin? But we need to understand the wording here. To say that they have a genetic link to Abraham is a true statement. No denying that. But this claim that Abraham is their father, at least in Jesus' eyes in this conversation, he's going to take that to mean they are emulating their father. And so when they say, Abraham is our father, he says, oh no, that's not the case. Because if that was the case, you would be obeying me because I gave you the truth that came from God. And that's exactly what Abraham did. Abraham obeyed God. He left his home. He offered his son. Well, they then kind of up the ante one more time. So we're Abraham's offspring. Now, wait a minute. Abraham is our father. And then we have them make this claim. We have one father, even God. So verse 41, they're making this claim, and it will be no surprise to us that Jesus totally disagrees with this. Verse 42, he said, if God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. So notice how that's kind of fleshing out. If you had Abraham for a father, you'd listen to me. If you had God for a father, you would love me. Because Abraham listened to God, and God the Father loves Jesus. And so after all of this, Jesus finally says, let me tell you who your true father is. And so we look in the first part of verse 44, and he says, you are of your father the devil. This is one of those places we need to try our best to put ourselves in the crowd that's hearing this. I agree you're Abraham's offspring. I don't agree Abraham is your father. I sure don't agree that God is your father. But here's what I do agree on, though you disagree. Your father is the devil. So that idea of emulating, that idea of sonship is still very much in play here. And the reason he's saying that is because in his discussion here, sons imitate the father. And for those who do not imitate, they are not sons. Now what we're about to find out with their father, the devil, is that he's a murderer and a liar. And Jesus is saying, yeah, that pretty much sums up who you are. You're doing exactly what your father does. So let's jump into that. To think about what Jesus said concerning the devil. As we said, he starts out by calling him a murderer and a liar from the very beginning. So here, even though the discussion on the devil is short, Jesus is dropping all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, and he's saying what this being has tried to do since the dawn of human history is to destroy. And so we consider then what Jesus is saying. It's interesting that John, it's translated murder in most all English translations. It is not the standard word for murder in the New Testament, though. In fact, this one is only used three times, only by John. Once here, twice over in 1 John. And the exact translation, which I think kind of picks up the Genesis 3 vibe a little bit more, is he was a human slayer. All right, that gives us the concept here that from the very beginning, His idea was he wanted to destroy humans. So Jesus says, your father, the devil, is a human slayer from the very beginning, and he has been a liar from the very beginning. Did you note all the descriptions Jesus gave as we were reading through that earlier? He says, he has nothing to do with the truth. That's enough for us to know he's a liar. But then Jesus says, there is no truth in him. Now that's a biggie, right? You talk about most liars, they've got at least a little truth in them. Jesus says, there is no truth in this guy. And then he says, he's lying, and if we tried to get that as exact as we could, it'd say something like he's lying from his own. And our English translations help us out a little bit, and they say, well, it's from his character, that's who he is. We say that about people, don't we? We'll say some quality they have, and we'll say, well, that's just who they are. Jesus says the anti-quality is who this guy is. Everything about him and his character is he's a liar. And for certain, getting us back to Genesis 3, he says he is the father of lies. That needs to disturb us. That as little as Jesus is saying about the devil, that the point he's wanting us to get and to get and to get and to get four times over is you cannot trust the devil. There is no truth in him, and he's been at this for a very long time. Way back at the dawn of creation, as the serpent comes into the garden, he says to Eve, did God really say you can't eat from any tree in the garden? Already working to get her messed up and confused. Eve says, oh no. He said we can eat from any tree except this one. And if we even touch it, surely we'll die. And the very first lie is this: you will not surely die. And thus, here is the serpent, who John will tell us in the Revelation, is the devil, introducing lying into the world. This was not a creation by God. This was the devil coming into this good world and introducing lying to it. And so as he does this, the very first thing, the very first lie that he's going to tell is you can't trust God. Here God had gave them a command. And the devil says, you know what, Eve? What he really knows is that in the day that you eat of that tree, you're going to be like him. You're going to know good from evil. And the definite undertone of that is, he is trying to keep you from the good life. He's trying to keep you back. And so here's Eve thinking, I can make an end run around all this command. The garden walks with God teaching us and instructing us. I can go straight to knowing everything God knows. And she looks at the tree and it looks pretty good. And that idea of being as wise as God is eating away in her thoughts. And the devil is quite successful. We know this even from people who lie to us, don't we? The best lies are going to have enough truth in them to be believable, but yet enough intrigue to encourage the wrong response. Something in there that you can say, well, maybe that's right, that sounds reasonable, but yet enough of that intrigue. Did the devil, did he do that? Yes. If there could be a perfect lie, here it is. Are they going to know the difference between good and evil? Yes. In that sense, will they be like God? Yes. Is it what he's telling them, the glory days? It is absolutely not. But yet Eve falls for that. He's successful in this first lie. And so that then introduces the other thing that Jesus tells us about the devil, that he was a murderer from the very beginning. So we consider here what he told Eve, that when you eat of it, you're not going to die. And yet, we know what God said, don't we? He says, but the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you will surely die. And at that moment, when Adam and Eve fall for the lie, and they rebel against God, and they follow the instruction of the devil, that eternal union is snapped. They lose their access to the tree of life. They lose the opportunity to eat and to live. And the way Jesus interprets that is that was murder. That was a human slayer. He took God's creation and he turned them against God. And then we'll see that replicated in the next generation when we've almost got a replay with different characters, but the same story going on in the Cain and Abel story as we had with the garden story, where Cain shows himself to be a son of the serpent and he murders his brother. Now let's think about how all this ties together with John chapter 8. So just as the serpent lied about God, the Jewish elite are lying about Jesus. Look down to verse 48. They're angry, they're upset. The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan?" That's an insult. But then note what they say, "and have a demon. We know who you are. You're working on the side of the enemy. You're working on the side of the serpent. We know whose son you really are." That's what they're saying about Jesus. And their whole goal in this is to keep people from the tree of life. Hold your place there for just a minute. Look just a page or two over to chapter 11. As Jesus here is in the midst of getting ready to raise Lazarus, Martha comes out to him. And Jesus says, you know, he's going to rise again. And Martha says, "I know on the last day he'll be raised." But look at verse 25. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet he shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." Now, the physical death, yeah, that's likely going to come. But yet Jesus is saying, the one who comes to me, they're with me from here on. No break. They'll always be with me. And yet, what the Jewish elite here was trying to do was the same thing that the serpent did, to tell this lie about God, to say that Jesus can't be believed, and therefore to keep people from eating, so to speak, of the words of Jesus, that tree of life. And so the point that we're seeing in this entire chapter is that every one of us is going to choose to be somebody's son. We are going to have a father, and their choice was that they chose their father, the devil. They were lying about Jesus, and in so doing, they were keeping others in death. Interesting section. And we could dig so much deeper down into it. But before we conclude our thoughts this afternoon, I want to make this real personal for us. Because as we talked about this morning, there is such a danger of taking these concepts and making them seem so shallow, and it's something from 2,000 years ago that really we don't need to worry about today. No, we need to be concerned. Don't need to fear, but we need to be concerned. And so let me just make two points with this that are not going to seem like points that took a whole lot of thought to get to, but I hope you'll take them for the importance that they are. The first one is, don't trust the devil. Now, your mama's probably been teaching you that all your life. But it's Jesus who's teaching that here. He's saying that you cannot do that because from the very dawn of creation, the devil has been trying to drive this wedge between humanity and God. maybe one of our questions that we would have asked Jesus is, why? What's his end game? What's his goal? What's he so upset about? Is he jealous of us? Does he think we have a better relationship than he could have with God? Does he want to be the Son of God? I have no idea. I have no idea. But what I do know is, from the garden forward, for every human who has reached the age of understanding, the devil has come along with his minions as the enemies, trying to get us to stop believing in God. And it's always the same. If you believe in God, you're missing out. If you think all of this about God is true, really what's going on is God is trying to keep you from the good life. And as it worked on Eve, it has worked countless times over. So I want to make this point to us. I don't know of any Christian who's totally honest with himself or herself who would make a statement like, I've never had doubts about God. I think all of us who are honest have had those moments when we're kind of confronted with that question and we're thinking, okay, is this really something believable? Is this really something that's right, that's true? What we've got to understand is that, yes, those doubts will come, but every one of those doubts is a temptation. It's the devil saying to us, you really can't trust in God. Because look, isn't all of this stuff just too fanciful to believe? You really believe this thing about a talking serpent in chapter 3 of the Bible? You really believe there was a great flood? You really believe there was this guy named Abraham and he had all these kids? You really believe the Red Sea parted? You really believe a virgin had a son and that son died and came back to life? Isn't all of this just too fanciful? And many times, Christians will say, I think you're right about that. Maybe I've just been force-fed this all my life. If that doesn't work, he'll say, do you really believe Jesus is the Son of God? I mean, is that something you can really accept? If that doesn't work, can you really believe that a good God would let evil into the world? If you study Genesis 3, you see exactly where evil came from. It was from a free will decision by one of these heavenly beings is where it came from. But would a good God really do? You see how that works? And he has seen it be so successful time and time again. And what he wanted for Adam and Eve is exactly what he wants for us. He wants us to die. He wants that eternal union broken. He doesn't want you believing that last page of the Bible that says you've got the right to eat from the tree of life. Doesn't want you to know all of that. Instead, he wants you to die. And so, here he is, this defeated being who wants to bring as many down with him as he can get, will lie to us and say, you can exchange a temporary pleasure. But what he doesn't tell us is, and it's going to cost you your eternal union with God. And so, for many Christians, it's almost like they view the shackles being broken, and I don't have to be concerned about how I live, and I don't have to be concerned about my reputation. I am who I am. The lies worked. Success. I don't think we know a lot about hell. I'd be a little fearful of anyone who said, I know exactly what hell is going to be like, because there's just very little description of it. But here's the one thing we know about it. Hell is for those who don't want to be human. That's what it boils down to. That God has created us to be humans in the fullest sense of the term. And I read something, I kind of like the wording of it. It says, hell is the quarantine for those who don't want to be human, to keep them from bothering the people who do. And for those who choose that quarantine, they will be there with their Father. That's what our Lord tells us. Don't trust the devil. And my other admonition is just as simple. Don't be a son. The Pharisees were manslayers. And their whole attempt was to keep people from Jesus. I don't think I'm talking to anybody tonight who's in that category. I don't know of anyone who would voluntarily come to a church that identifies itself as a church that belongs to Jesus to talk people out of trusting Jesus. That's just not going to happen. But what we do need to learn is it can be easy for religious people to get off track. The Pharisees would have been viewed as the most religious, the elite in knowing the law, being able to explain it to you, and yet they are the very ones who Jesus is saying, your father, the murderer, the liar, is the one who's inspiring you right now in all of this. And so we never come to that point where we say, oh, this will never be a problem for me. No, it can be a problem. Because what can happen is that not that we would deny Jesus, but instead we would try to make Jesus fit into our mold of who we think he should be. And there's a variety of thoughts out there, aren't there? On the one extreme, we've got some who look at Jesus as kind of this first century hippie philosopher, you know, who walks around and he has no home and he's saying all these nice platitudes, and if you listen to him, you'd probably have a pretty good life. You got that on one end. I've never been with a lot of folks like that, just to be honest. The associations I've had have often been on the other end. You know, and I'm exaggerating here a bit, Jesus probably doesn't want to save you anyway. Because if you can't jump through all his hoops, then that means that you've got no hope whatsoever. And it's this emphasis on this meticulous, you can't get it right, so why even try? But you need to try or you're going to go to hell mentality, where it's kind of like you're lost if you do it, you're lost if you don't do it. You got those extremes and you got everything in between. And if we ever get off on the wrong track of that, what that's going to bring us to do is to turn others to an untrue version of Jesus. On the one end, teaching, you don't have to do anything different. Just come as you are, stay as you are. It'll be okay. He expects nothing of you. It's just a free, fun time with him. And on the other hand, you probably have no hope of being saved anyway, so why are you? You got both of those competing attitudes. You see what happens. It's what the Pharisees were doing. They thought they were right, thought they understood God, but how far they were from Him. But I think the biggest warning that we need to get is not accepting the true sense of our humanity. To never fully grasp what it means that God created us to be human. Because what that means is that we are to be the God imagers. A lot of ideas about this line, and we'll not go into them all tonight, but what it boils down to is when someone talks to me, they should be talking to a reflection of God. That I am His representative here on earth. And when I am bearing this image, then what I'm doing is showing that I am His Son. I am fully accepting Him. And I'm honoring Him. And I'm true to Him. And so then, my attitude and my actions and my words, I'm always thinking about through this, how am I making my Father look? By what I say, by the attitudes that I hold, by the words that I speak. Are people able to see God living in me? Are they able to hear God, in a sense, speaking through me when I'm telling them what He said? Because all of that's going to mean that I'm choosing my Father. And when I'm honoring God, God will honor me by calling me His Son. But to reject that is to accept the fatherhood of Satan, the liar and the murderer. And thus that choice comes down to us. I hope these thoughts have been helpful to you as we think about what we face, again, the seriousness of the enemy. But the great thing of knowing it doesn't have to scare us. That if we are with Jesus Christ, we are safe with Him right now in the heavenly places. And one day we will be safe with Him eternally, where all of the wicked and the evil is quarantined with their Father, so that we can be fully human in every way that our Father has created us to be. If you're ready to make that decision tonight, I would encourage you to do that, to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. If this enemy's been plaguing you lately, we can pray about that too. Whatever it takes, let's all go away tonight assured that we are the sons of God. You can come now as we stand and sing together.
Thanks again for joining us today. If you have questions about anything you heard today or anything Bible-related, you can use the contact form on our website at teachingtruth.org to submit a question and someone will be in touch. There's also lots of other great Bible content on our site as well. The web address again is teachingtruth.org. Once again, thanks for listening, and we hope to see you in person soon.